Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, bonjour. In Spain, hola. In Italy, ciao. In Egypt, ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, akwaba. In Nigeria, peleo. In South Africa, sawubona. In Senegal, nangadef. In Kenya, jambo. In Israel, shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, assalamu alaikum. Greetings. And may peace be upon you all.
Tune in to Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green on Thursdays at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time to hear great topics and stories on grief and turn it into victory. Join Dr. Debbie Green to listen to stories of triumph and learn how to overcome. You are not alone in your life, and there is hope in the darkest hour. This is your time to learn strategies and solutions to improve your life. It's your time. So join Dr. Debbie Green with Soulful Solutions and call in on Thursday at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time at 515-605-9325 with comments and questions. Look to hear from you real soon.
Yes, Grand Rising. Thank you all for joining us for this Thursday edition of the Female Solution Global Radio TV show, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. Join today with Dr. Debbie Green for an inspirational and thought-provoking interview with DeJuan Green. Being a young black male in society today can be very challenging and trivial. DeJuan and Dr. Green will discuss various topics in his life and how he overcame setbacks and battles fears. Adversity affects all of us to the core of our being. And obstacles can become barriers in life if we're not careful. This life comes with many consequences, and we have to always search for the solutions. Join Dr. Green to talk about wisdom gained from life as her guest explores and shares his experience through life. And if you've got a young man in your life, you may want to send them the link to this show so they can tune in, listen in, and call in and share their experiences. This is a very tumultuous time for young males, for men who have had to face unfair judgment of them, unfair criticism, unfair fear of them. And many times, young men are feeling day to day the threat against their very lives. Living at a high level of stress, what does that do to your brain chemistry? What does that do to your heart? What does that do to your sense of well-being when you're always on alert? How do you change the expectations of negative responses to your very presence? How do you grow and evolve into the person you were meant to be when you were in an environment that is unfair and unjust? And yet you can overcome and you can override other people's thoughts and expectations and behaviors and still thrive. We often see young men in our midst as dangerous, or we see them as misdirected, or we see them as potential pain-causing people who have lost their way. But sometimes these people in our midst are here to bring us wisdom. They're here to show us our own prejudice and our own negative thinking that's not based in any reality at all except the reality created in our own minds. Young men are given the greatest challenge, told to be the heads of households and take care of children and lead the society. And often that very society is placing obstacles in their path. But a wise person once said, the only difference between a stumbling block and a stepping stone is how high you step. So how do you take those stumbling blocks and turn them into stepping stones? We'll hear about that today from DeJohn Green. And you may feel that you can relate to DeJohn and his story. If you are a man who has overcome the negative experience of other people's low expectations, if you have given your best effort and strived and achieved that which you set out to achieve, if you have been a good example to younger men coming after you and an inspiration, you may have become a coach, a teacher, a counselor, or just a regular parent. But someone saw you, and in you they saw themselves, and they were encouraged. All of us have a responsibility to become our best selves. And all of us have the power to become our best selves. We simply need to choose to do so. It isn't always easy, but it is necessary because this is our reason for being. This is why we're here, all of us. And so the process of becoming involves overcoming. And that means we have to keep our eyes on the prize, as it said. Because truly there is a prize at the end. And what we experience at the end is a sense of empowerment, because we are realizing that no one has power greater than our own. No one can truly stop us from becoming who we were created to be. And no one can prevent the power of the universe from coming through us once we make up our minds that nothing is going to stop us. Nothing can stop us. But we need to experience that. We need to experience the victory of it so that we can inspire others who may have been discouraged by temporary setbacks. Setbacks are just that, temporary. And so if we know that, then rather than be discouraged by these temporary setbacks, we will, in fact, choose to overcome. We need to demonstrate victory over adversity so those coming behind us can see what it looks like. What does it look like to overcome? What does it look like to transform? What does it look like to create? Our young people need to see success. And success is not a dollar figure. Success is not an amount in a bank account. Success is not a type of car. Success is not a size of house. Success is not a suit of clothes. Success is a state of well-being, of knowing that you have the power in your own hands to become whatever you choose. And success is living without fear. So now we're going to hear the wise words of Dr. Debbie Green.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, everyone. Grand Rising, Grand Rising. It's a beautiful day here in Atlanta. We had a wonderful storm that came through and took whatever it needed and kept on traveling.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm sure it left the grass and the trees all green and everything because, you know, that's what rain and storms do, you know.
That's right. That's right. The Creator got us, you know, he has to water his garden. I keep telling you, he said, sometimes he had to blow it, too. That's where the winds come, right?
That's right.
Absolutely. Well, I tell you, good morning, Naima. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Make sure you hit the live there on there.
That's right, yes, because, you know, I'm a little nervous this morning. As you can see, I'm a little, but it's going to be okay.
We've got a special guest, so I can understand your nervousness.
Yes, we do. We have a special guest today, and I have been waiting for some time for him to confirm to be on the show, but we're finally here. So 7:14 is a wonderful day. It's a wonderful day in my life, sure. Yes, absolutely. Before we get started, what I wanted to do is my goal was to actually introduce someone that has been through a series of life challenges. And we know, as being a young black man in America, you know, that's a challenge itself, you know, just being that. And I'm going to allow him to tell you the majority of it, but just the knowing him over the years, you know, he is such an inspiration to me. I just wanted to let everyone know that, like I said, when we share, you know, wonderful interviews like this, you know, we never know who's listening.
That's right.
Someone can be inspired. Because we know that these are the times where people are really going through so much. And so I don't take it for granted, not one second, that I will not, you know, offer to save a life in some type, or not just save one, but to inspire one, you know,
right.
To go a little bit higher.
So
he's just going to be on the mic, so he won't be on Facebook, but he should have his mic open, if I'm not mistaken, and...
Okay, well, he hasn't appeared on the switchboard yet, but, you know.
Okay, he's probably going to get there probably by 8:30, something of that nature. I'm going to make sure I text him. So in the meantime, what I want to do is talk about also some issues that young black African-American males face today, and just getting career-orientated, not being judged, and we know all we got to do is look at our news that it has been a very difficult time for those
yes.
that are affected by, you know, racial divide, if we could say it so nicely, you know. And this has been like this for quite some time, you know. This is nothing new to us. This is the same thing. I mean, when I was born in the 60s, you know. So in the 60s, it was alive and well. In the 70s, it was alive and well, you know. And it goes all the way back to the 50s and the 30s.
Yeah.
So, you know, this, I almost want to call genocidal type of, you know, indignation of our young black male, you know, the challenge that they have, you know, to just allow themselves just to be, you know, and not be judged, but just to be.
Yes, yes.
You know, and I know that's a difficult thing, especially for mothers and fathers that have young black, you know, young black males that, you know, they automatically know it comes with some type of really heavy challenge to help them and to assist them so they don't get caught up into anything emotionally. Because think about it, if you're not really stable emotionally, you can see a police just come behind you and you're driving. And because our media has blown, you know, expand it, and I mean, I'm sure that it is just as serious as they say it can be, because we know this to be real.
Yeah.
Because we see it.
We see it all the
time. Yes. It is very prominent in our society today that young black males are our target.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
They are a target. Not young black females, but young black males.
Yeah. And every now and then you'll see a female, you know.
Yeah.
It kind of depends on what is in the spirit of the person that stops them.
Correct.
And one thing we need to teach people, how to work with the energy of the other person.
Yes.
Because you can transmute their energy from negative to positive, but you have to know the science behind it. But so many of our young men, because as you say, you know, under the surface is fear, panic, apprehension because of what has happened. It's hard for them to get control of their thoughts and produce that state of peace that can then transfer to the other person. Instead, there's anger and apprehension, and then that becomes the interplay. And here, I mean, if you've got somebody walking up to you with their hand on a gun, it's kind of hard to get the presence of mind to stay calm, because that person is a real threat to you, and you've seen them shoot other people for doing
right.
nothing. So
it's in the back of your mind.
It's in the back of your mind. And that's
yeah.
a heck of a thing to just be living with that all day long. You know, the idea of someone can kill you because maybe you know, missed a stop sign, or, you know, got a tail light that went out. I mean, that shouldn't be you know, a cause of probable death, but too many young men are facing that, and that's a level of anxiety to be living that every single day. What is that doing to you? So it's a lot. It's a lot. Your personhood is under attack. So this is to see people overcome it anyway.
Yeah.
That takes a lot of inner strength, and we got to give our young men credit for having the presence of mind to still be able to have some type of normalcy in their life in spite of an abnormal situation that they face every day, every time they leave the house.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, but you're absolutely correct. It's the energy that you have. You literally, I mean, just have to be really reserved. You have to be very reserved and assertive.
Yes.
You know, and slightly passive. You got to mix that assertive with some passivity in there, you know.
Inner
because
that's what you have to project, the inner peace, you know.
Yes.
Which
yes.
comes from a sense of confidence, which is definitely different than passivity based on fear and cowering down
absolutely.
And afraid. It's a different,
yes.
It's I am in control of me. I am in control of this situation. I am calm in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can't rattle me because I am in control of me.
Right.
And, yeah, that takes some practice. It really does.
Yes.
Because
yes.
You are dealing with other energetic forces. Because the person coming to you with their hand on the gun, they are in a state of fear. And that's why they are out of control.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And those stories are so surreal because we hear them all the time. And I don't know, what do you think now? Do you think it's slackened up for a little bit, lessened?
Well, I think...
Oh, you think the media is not so focused on it?
Well, I think the presence of the media, I mean, you've got officers that have their body cams, and that was a law that was passed as a result of all those things that had been exposed. And then you have people who have their own body cams. They got their cell phone, they got their Facebook Live on, they have the same power to record, and they can record in real time live so that people are watching action as it happens. That's a lot of power that citizens have in their hands. And so because those things have been seen over and over again and promoted on social media, I think officers are now more aware that their career could be destroyed if they lose control of themselves and appear to be discriminatory, not to mention the lawsuits that are being filed. So I think those things are helping police departments to understand they've got to provide better training and get rid of those who are embarrassing them and, you know, the elected officials that are responsible for their appointment in those positions, because they could then affect, you know, this is election season. One bad incident and, you know, whoever's running for alderman, mayor, governor, everybody could be blamed for it. You let this person be on our police force and look at what they did. So people are more conscious about not behaving badly because they're on camera and the camera is in the hands of the citizen. And you can't tell them, turn that off. No, you on live right now telling me to turn it off. So everybody's watching you act up. Now, what are you going to do? So that's
exactly.
The power that we've given ourselves with social media. And I'm grateful for that because
yes.
It does provide an equalizer. And if you know that the world is watching you, are you really going to act ugly? No. So this is
because it saves lives.
Yes. So I think it is diminishing to a degree, but we still have to address the human element that's making it manifest. What is inside of people that meet each other every day that make them act ugly? Now I posted this event. I was just, it had me crying. What happened there on the traffic stop, a state trooper stopped a man. He was in the car with his daughter. She was driving, maybe going a little fast. And as they got to talking, you know, and she was talking about she was taking her father to his doctor's appointment. He had colon cancer. Well, it just happened the state trooper had colon cancer. And so he asked if he could pray with the man. And the man said, well, yes, you know, I'm a deacon in church. I'll definitely accept prayer. So the two of them were praying together. And so the daughter, she took a picture of it. And... you know, now later on the father passed away, but she sent this picture out showing the two men holding hands and praying. And I just cried when I saw that. I said, now this is what we need. This is the kind of human interaction that should happen between citizens, whether one is a police officer or a traffic enforcer or whatever it is, and the citizen that they're meeting. These are two human beings. If you can see each other as human beings and connect on a human level, how beautiful was that moment that the two men shared? And so when we can become those spiritual beings that we were born to be, then our interactions don't need to be fearful. They don't need to be hurtful. They don't need to be violent because we see each other for who we are. And this is what has to happen so that no one has to be constantly living in fear of assault and loss of life because of someone else's fear. So I saw that and I said, this should inspire everybody who's in law enforcement who is slowly losing their humanity because they have to see the worst part of humanity every day. They have to reconnect with their inner being, their spiritual self, and see other people differently. Do not see them as a potential threat or a potential criminal or somebody who has to be manhandled. See them as the soul that they are and a reflection of you as a soul that you are. When we do that, everything will change.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. I totally agree with that. And it's only, it's like one person at a time.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it, we would love for it to be a collaboration. You know, if everyone just, if this was like a huge wave that went across the world.
Yeah.
And it just changed the way people think.
Yeah.
And how they live. That would just be absolutely beautiful, yeah. You know.
It's possible. It's doable. You know, we can do
that's it. That's Summit for Peace, right?
Absolutely.
Yes. Absolutely. I think that is so profound because, again, it starts with the family,
yes.
You know.
Yes.
It starts and it ends with the family. That's it. We can teach our children how to respond. And I think I saw on Facebook one day, it was the police was just doing a check around the neighborhood. Mm. You know, how they just kind of, when they're just strolling or whatever, surveying or whatever the case may be. Mm. And this little black boy, okay, he was in his yard playing. Mm-hmm. And when he saw the police, he hid behind the car.
Oh. Wow.
I mean, he learned, you, I don't know who was recording this, but he literally hid behind the car, and you could see him looking.
Wow.
And so he was very fearful.
Wow.
Now, he wasn't doing anything, and he looked to be no more than maybe 10 years old.
Mm. But what they represent in his mind already is
dangerous. Yeah.
You know, which is ironic because they're supposed to be representing safety. But look at look at what the actions that so many of them have performed. Look at what they have created in the minds of this younger generation.
Right.
They are the people to be feared because they cause harm. That's a horrible thought. I have friends who are police officers. I know that's not what they want. That's not the vibration they want to be carrying. But as a result of what happened, that is how people see them.
Yes, that is so true. And, of course, It's almost like it doesn't matter what race they are, they just have that mind.
Yeah.
It's like it's in their mind that this person is not safe.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it could be a good person of it, but they're already prejudged.
Yeah.
Just from and I mean, I know like 20 years ago or longer, you know, social media wasn't up close and personal, giving us all the details, the gory details of what happens or what the case may be. And so I'm just like, okay, you know, but I'm sure you didn't grow up with it. We didn't grow up with it.
Well, I remember in first grade, you know, officer friendly. You know, we had the police officer that came to the classroom, and they talked about safety.
Right,
and,
yes.
You know,
that's all I remember about police officers.
Yeah, that was, but then later on, and because I grew up in the 60s, and then, of course, the 70s, you had things like the Black Panthers and what was happening in Oakland, California, these confrontations. And the thought was put out there that, you know, some police are not nice and are hurtful and dangerous. And so you realized that other people were having a different experience with police officers. Now, some of my friends that I grew up with, their fathers were police. So it was a different thought that I had about them. But then I also had an awareness that everybody was not having a good experience. And then I think the Black Panthers came out with these comic books. They were calling police pigs. It was really an awful time of hatred because of what had happened. And when you don't address a wrong, then the response to the wrong escalates the anger. and, you know, and just that whole environment during that time. And then you had the protest movements that were going on and the confrontations with police on that. So, and then those things were starting to be shown on television. So my early exposure to police as the officer friendly that you could trust and was out to protect you, that got distorted and changed over time because of the political events, the social climate. And unfortunately, we have not been able to repair the damage, and we have not been able to redefine the role of police, who have often come into the job with the belief that they've got to stop crime and get a handle on these criminals, and, you know, and they coming into the position with an adversarial mindset instead of, I'm here to help, I'm here to keep people safe, I'm here to look out for children. It's a different mindset. They're coming, and many of them are career military people. You know, now I've served time in the military, now I'm going to get a civilian job, but I've still got the military mindset of, you know, I'm looking for an enemy combatant, and that mindset is dangerous. And so that's what we're seeing, the manifestation of that behavior, and that's what has to be changed, because it's not appropriate in a civilian setting where you're supposed to be making children feel safe, not having to hide from you behind a car because they see you as a threat to their lives. That's very sad.
Right, right. Well, hopefully, you know, one day the image of change as time changes, that our young black males from the ages of 5 to 35, you know, will be able to walk and live, you know, in a state of freedom and not a state of fear.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we're going to go ahead and take our first break, and I believe our guest is called in.
Yes, please press 1. Okay. We got a bunch of callers on the switchboard, so I need to see which one is you, so press 1.
Okay, I'll text you his last 4 digits.
That'll work, and we'll open his microphone after this quick break. And if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325. Press 1 when you're ready to speak. We'll open your mic and get your thoughts. And if you're watching us on Facebook Live on Soulful Solutions on Facebook, then write in your comments. We'll share them with our listening and viewing audience. We'll put your name and your comments right up on screen so everybody can see what you had to say. And we'll be right back after this quick break, so stay with us.
Have you ever dreamed of going to exotic places, meeting fascinating people, enjoying uplifting music, and spending nights in a luxurious hotel? Do you look forward to a relaxing vacation where you can walk along the beach or sit in a quiet park and enjoy the sunset or sunrise? Whether you're flying around the world or driving across the country, we will share travel tips that will help you stay safe while you enjoy the journey. Join me every third Saturday of the month, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, and move around with Deborah here on the Female Solutions Show. Call in and comment, 515-605-9325, and press 1 to speak.
Hi, this is John Alexander.
And I'm Naima Latif. Meet people like you who are making a positive difference in the world.
Big difference.
Watch us every day on The Media Connection at www.youtube.com/TheMediaConnectionTV.
YouTube it. We'll see you soon.
There are people who choose to make a positive difference in the world. Our job is to bring you their stories to motivate you to do the same. Join us each week, host John Alexander and Naima Latif, as we bring you the educators, entertainers, elected officials, religious leaders, and community activists whose works are transforming this world. Find out how you can make a difference, too. Be inspired. Watch The Media Connection.
Mondays at 5 p.m. and Tuesdays at 12 noon on cable TV, Channel 19 in Chicago. And other cities, check your local cable listings.
crime in Chicago continues to increase. Communities and politicians must come together to make a change. No one person can solve these problems by themselves, but I believe together we can make progress. Let's provide job training, economic growth, and invest into our 77 community. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for mayor.
Hey, it's time to take charge of your health. I'm Viata, your holistic life coach, and every Friday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I'm here on The Female Solution to empower you to make choices that will assist your evolution to abundant health. I'm also blogging every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at Soul Purpose Healing, where I bring you a spiritual chiropractic adjustment to bring you back into alignment with our Creator's love, compassion, and wisdom. Join me every Friday morning at 8 a.m. and Sunday evening at 8 p.m. for a time of unity, enlightenment, and love vibration. Shalom.
John Green of hometown Charleston, South Carolina, and I'm just glad to be on today. So how's everybody doing?
Oh, we are doing wonderful. Thank you for allowing us to share some of your wisdom today and just get the opportunity to talk to you. I would like for you just to tell us just a little bit about yourself. And I know you're from South Carolina, which is my hometown.
South Carolina, that's got some history to it.
Yes, absolutely. So just, if you could, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, okay. So as you just said, I was born and raised in Charleston, South Carolina. That's definitely home for me. Attended elementary, middle school, high school there. I even attended my first year of college there. In my, I'd say, late teen years, was kind of fumbling around to try to figure out what I was going to do. As I was preparing for graduation from high school, and most of my friends, I guess they had already had, you know, ideas of what they wanted to do. So I was watching them kind of step into different careers, whether they were becoming like ministers or whether they would be, you know, going into medicine. And I didn't know at all. I was quite puzzled at what I was supposed to do. And the only thing I knew to do was to pray to God, because I figured that, you know, I can't see that far past my nose. And there's a lot of future ahead of me, and I didn't, you know, I wanted to make the best decision possible. And really kind of seeking him, I would say, I felt called to join the United States Armed Forces. And I remember telling my my father at the time, and he was wondering where I got the idea from. And I told him just that. I told him that I was, that it really wasn't me. I just felt called to do it. And so I took it upon myself to get up one morning and go to the recruiting office. And I enlisted into the United States Air Force. That happened when I was 19 years old. Little did I know what I was signing up for, it would forever change my life. Fast forward until about 10 years. So I ended up on active duty for 10 years. And so I transitioned from active duty just about 5 years ago. So I was on active duty from the ages of 19 to 29. And then after living out that part of my life, I transitioned to become a full-time student at the University of Texas. Amazingly, there was no time in between. It was just going from an active duty lifestyle to a full-time student. I think there was maybe about a three-month break, but I literally came off of active duty right here. I live in Austin, Texas now, and I've been here ever since, working on a bachelor's degree in architecture. And I, looking back, like, I can see the reason why. I can understand completely now why I was called to be in the United States Air Force. And I can also see why I was called out to become a reservist and start a career as a reservist to pursue architecture. Architecture is a dream I had since I was 9 years old. I even remember telling my grandmother, I was standing in the kitchen, standing in her kitchen. I remember like it was yesterday when I was telling her I was going to be an architect. And I don't think I could even spell the word correctly at that age, but for some reason I knew what that was. And I knew exactly what that was. And I remember her giving me a hard time because I would take her good sheets, as she would call it, and I would create these little fortresses in the middle of the living room with their dining room chairs. but that was the early and initial abilities, I guess, kind of showing themselves of me wanting to create a living space, you know, create the built environment. So that same dream came back to really tap me on the shoulder during my career in the armed forces. So here I am now. I am 4 years into this bachelor's degree program, and I have about a year left, and I'm pretty close to graduating. So it's amazing to think about, to be this close to a childhood dream. But along the way, I have spent a lot of time serving youth. That's where my heart is. So essentially the age range is, I'd say anywhere from like maybe 12 years old to all the way up to about 18. So middle schoolers and high schoolers. I've had the pleasure of being able to serve really for, like, I'd say the last 5 years here in Texas. So that has been my anchor. Just being able to serve them, being able to help them understand their place in the world. Especially considering everything that's going on right now, and how the world's changing, considering like racial tensions or the main impacts of social media, different things like that, and of course how they can learn to navigate this world as it pertains to their relationship with God. So that's a little bit about me. If I could, I don't know if you guys want me to share like hobbies and interests. Should I share those as well, or?
Yeah, it's funny that he talks about the early signs of being interested in architecture, because I remember as a little girl, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old, I used to construct dollhouses, and I thought I'd be write out blueprints for houses, then construct them out of cardboard and then make the furniture. I mean, do the whole 9 yards.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so I thought at one point of being an
that
architect.
That must be the universe telling you to pick it back up.
Yes, yes.
Wow.
So, yeah, I know that passion for creating living spaces and just, you know, the whole creativity of it. Yeah, and it's wonderful that he decided to pursue that passion and actually make it happen. Yeah.
Absolutely, it is. If I could ask you just a couple of questions. So what inspires you, like, as far as you know, what do you want to give back? Once you complete the degree, and I know you're like you're saying you're just kind of putting things in order, but, I mean, if you just had this magic wand and you could say, okay, I've done this, and what's next, and you can make the what next happen, do you know what that would be?
Absolutely. I think the simplest way I could explain it would be the instance of when, let's say, a child, a grade school child, goes to their bus stop, and right next to their bus stop is an abandoned building or an abandoned home. And it may be in the backdrop, you know. It's not to say that they go and, you know, as they're at the bus stop, they focus on the abandoned building or abandoned home next to that location. But it does affect their psyche. It does, whether they know it or not, right? Because that damaged building or abandoned home, right, that speaks to their living space on a much larger scale, you know, their neighborhood. And in some ways, it affects the way they feel about themselves and the way they feel about their future. You know, it's like saying, well, if I'm just getting started and I'm surrounded by this type of living environment, then what is really out there for me? You know, like, what chances do I have in life if I'm already starting in a place like this, you know? And so what I desire to come in and do and be a part of is really to serve the community. Architecture is a collaborative, meaning that architecture is not a one-man show. It really takes a group of people who are really in agreement and really in alignment and on the same accord and really seeking after the same objectives and the same purpose. And mine would be, if I'm stepping into a community, it would be to change the face of that community. And if I use the same analogy or the same narrative, it would be that grade school child going back to that bus stop, but seeing a brand new home there or seeing a brand new building there. And so now, like I said, even though it's a part of the backdrop, it does affect how they feel about themselves because it poses a different message. So the message now becomes, wow, man, someone was kind enough to come and, you know, erect something like this in my neighborhood. Man, what does that say about me? What does that say about my future? You know, it's a much more positive, optimistic outcome and outlook that they would have simply by the built environment being changed around them. And so that's probably the simplest way I could explain it. I mean, I could go into a lot of other things to try to give you an idea, but that's probably the simplest way I could explain it.
You know, DeJohn, what really would be powerful is when that young boy goes back to that bus stop and he sees the men working on that building and he sees them in the process of transforming it. And then when he goes back to that bus stop again, he sees the finished product and he sees the power to create and to transform. And he then gets inspired and says, I want to be able to do that. I want to be able to take something that was old and broken down and abandoned and transform it into something new. And so I'm going to study math, and I'm going to study geometry. Yes. I'm going to study all of the things that I need to know to become a builder. That's what I want to do. That's how we inspire.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that is exactly the message that I desire to send. It is essentially showing someone that they matter. You know, it doesn't matter where you're from or what color you are or, you know, your ethnic background. Or, you know, none of that matters. Like, you matter as a person, as a whole person, and you're worth it. You know, whether that's a young girl or a young boy, is showing you're worth it and your neighborhood is worth it. So no one should be written off as if they don't matter. You know, if I were to take this into a let's say outside of the United States, into a overseas or third world atmosphere, it would be then now architecture becomes a thing of necessity. You know, I'll give you an example. In the southern part of Africa, there was There were these women who had this really broke down, nearly abandoned pregnant woman shelter, you know, and you would think that, you know, if these women are nursing new life, that, you know, they should have the best facilities. But it was quite the opposite, you know, and not only were they having health problems, the newborn children were having health problems because of where they were being born. And so there is a architectural group called Mass Design. And basically what they did is they took on the entire task. They took on the entire project of creating an entirely new facility right there at that location. So they essentially used the same foundation, but they rebuilt the whole facility for the pregnant women in that location. So now it's twofold. Now it sends the message that, man, we're worth it. We're valued. Someone cares. But also now I, as a woman, I have a place to go and have my child where I'm healthy and my child is healthy, and we are starting off on a brand new life, and I don't have to be concerned about all the health problems that will take place only because I know that someone took the time to come here and create this facility for us. So architecture for me is never been about one person or about one job or about stepping into, you know, a neighborhood and trying to show what I can do. Oh, it's not about that at all. It's always been about serving the community and finding out exactly what's needed and how it could send a completely different message as opposed to the messages that are being sent beforehand. Yeah.
That is so true. And Dr. Debbie, what he is saying is so profound. We were talking the other day about the signals we're giving our children when we allow them to grow up in environments that are dirty and dilapidated and abandoned, the signal that we're giving to them when they're growing up next to trash all over the ground. It's like saying, you are trash. That's what they feel on the inside. So when someone comes and beautifies your surroundings, that's like saying, you are worthy of, you are beautiful. And that makes a big difference. It makes a big difference on how a child feels about themselves. Matter of fact, I think I was talking the other day about, you know, when I went to a school, when my daughter, you know, she taught overseas in South Korea for 5 years, and when I first went to visit her, it struck me how the school there had these very bright colors. The desks were, like, bright orange and yellow, and the floors were, you know, bright green and red. I mean, just all these bright colors, and I realized it was just a whole different atmosphere. Just kind of brought my spirit up. I felt joy just from the atmosphere of the colors. And then I realized, in many of our schools, you know, everything is kind of drab and brown and gray, and you feel sad because just the atmosphere of the colors make you feel sad. So environment does matter. And when architects and builders and the creators of structures think about all of those details that affect your mood, affect your feelings, you know, that really is a science. So I saw the difference in the school atmosphere there just based on how it was designed and the colors that were used and what we have here. And it almost feels like a prison in our school. So is it any surprise that our children end up going from school to prison? Because it's almost like they're conditioned just by the atmosphere, the building itself. It's amazing. It makes a difference.
It does tremendously. I want to ask John, one other question. So as a young black male, do you see any challenge in the field of architecture at all? Or even in the military experience that you went through?
I would say as far as being in the military, the challenges are underlying. So, you know, they're not obvious, you know, they're not like blatant. You really have to pay attention. I would say also that as far as African Americans in the military, I definitely know that we are unquestionably the minority. I was surrounded more so by Caucasian American most of the time, which didn't bother me. I was very lucky, and I would actually use the word blessed, to grow up in a neighborhood, the first neighborhood where I, you know, was in grade school, was kind of learning my way, making friends. My first friend was white, and he became my best friend. Still remember his name to this day, David Harmon. And would play basketball with him, got to know his family, and I've learned later on that his father was a pastor, and maybe that's the reason why we became friends, because he treated me with a dignity and respect that was kind of mutual between the both of us. But in that same neighborhood, I also had a friend who was Indian. And so it was early exposure to these different ethnic backgrounds and nationalities that really helped me see that, you know, color was, you know, not a thing. I guess for me, I really wasn't that cognizant of it going into the military, and I think that I managed to continue that all throughout my military career. But some of the underlying challenges would be maybe if I made a certain mistake being an African American versus someone else making that same mistake, and maybe they are not an African American, there's a chance that maybe that person, you know, might have another chance. but maybe I might not, you know. Maybe that is cut short for me. So it really taught me how to navigate the military in a way where in some cases I had to work harder because those around me, based on their experiences with African-American people, they probably thought that, oh, man, he's just kind of here to bide his time and get a paycheck, you know. And for whatever reason, you know, I guess that's what they had in mind, but I was the guy that was working double time, almost triple time, you know, just to make it clear to everyone that I'm here to work, and I'm here to do the job correctly the first time. So there's no need for anybody to kind of walk behind me or look over my shoulder. And whether you're looking over my shoulder because you think I'm incompetent, or you're looking over my shoulder because of the color of my skin, neither one of them are going to bother me, because I want to do the job so well to where it's unquestioned. So I think some of the underlying challenges just were kind of based on what people expect of me, and also understanding that there wasn't a lot of room for mistakes. I'd say that that's the biggest one. Just understanding that you could really, really hurt your career off of one bad incident, and it will stick with you as an African-American versus, you know, maybe if you're not, maybe let's say maybe you're Caucasian, or maybe you're Hawaiian, you know, or Alaskan. There's a chance that it wouldn't stick with you. So just being cognizant of that, and always being mindful of who I am and the color of my skin versus everyone else around me, you know, it's like saying, you know, I don't consider myself to be racial at all. I really don't think in terms of race, but I'm also very aware. That's the word I want to use. Very aware of the color of my skin and the color of the skin of everyone else in the room, if that makes sense. So.
So it's kind of like you realize that everything you do, you're representing the race, even though that wasn't your intention, but you know that's how other people see you, as you represent African Americans, whereas everybody else can just represent themselves. They can make a mistake and they're okay, well, they messed up, well, you know, they'll get better. But you, oh, here's another black person making a mistake. Well, we can't have that.
Yes.
You said that's
exactly what it was.
Yeah, that's kind of what we still experience. Many people on jobs, they realize that they are still representing the race, you know, the perceived race that people have in mind, which is unfair, you know, but unfortunately we have to grow out of that thinking. We got to take a break, but when we come back, John, I want to ask you a question about the military that, you know, has been on my heart, especially since a lot of people have had that military experience. So we'll talk about that when we come back after the break. And if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325. And, oh, we got a couple of hands raised. So I'm going to ask my question, and then we're going to go to 773-984. We'll take you, and then 312-366, and then 312-671. We'll take you all in that order, and anybody else on our switchboard got something to say, press 1 so we know that you have a thought you'd like to share or a question for our guest, DeJohn Green, upcoming architect. And we will be right back after this quick break, so stay with us.
Oh, man, God sent the monthly sun bill today. This sunlight is really expensive, especially during this season. I'll probably have to work overtime to pay it.
Well, you better pay it on time. We don't want the sun to go out and we're sitting up here all day in the dark.
Wouldn't it be terrible if God charged us for sunlight? Well, thank God, the light and heat from the sun is free. So why are we paying such high bills for the energy we use in our homes? Because we don't know how to use solar energy, the free energy from the sun. You can convert your regular home to a solar energy home and save tremendously on your electric bill. Take a look at your electric bill. Wouldn't you like to reduce or possibly even eliminate that cost altogether? Let one of our solar consultants show you how. Call today, 312-849-3456, and schedule a free consultation. That's 312-849-3456.
Do you want to live in a world without war? Join our global peace movement. Heavenly Culture World Peace Restoration of Light transcends culture, religion, ideology, and other boundaries to achieve peaceful harmony in the global society. HWPL is committed to bringing world peace and cessation of war through peaceful dialogue between religious groups. I am Director Shin-Suk Kim of the HWPL Chicago Branch of North America. Join us for our next gathering. Call 773-580-1501 and be a part of the movement for world peace. Email us at chicagohwpl@gmail.com.
Our kids are the future and should not be left behind. One person should not decide what is the best for our 77 communities. Politicians must work together for our kids' best interests. They deserve a safe education with resources that meet every student need. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for Mayor.
Dr. Debbie Green, with my wonderful co-host, Naima Latif, our executive producer of The Female Solution. So go ahead and ask your question, Naima.
Well, DeJohn, you've had a military experience. I know a lot of who basically went into the military because they offer training, they offer professional skill development and all those wonderful things, but also underlying it is the job of killing. That is what a soldier does, whatever branch in the Army it is. The idea is that if we have an enemy anywhere in any country, you are willing to be the one to provide the action of executing those who are in their armed forces as an act of war. Now, of course, many people in the military never see that side of it. You know, they do desk work, they do technical work, they, you know, they are able to get out of the military without ever having experienced that. But the reality that they have to be trained in the mindset to kill someone that is there. So now you're very service oriented, but how did you reconcile in your own mind the job of killing as part of the military? How do you prepare yourself mentally for that? And if the target is a certain kind of people, as you said, you grew up really non-racial because you had multiracial friends, but in order for the military to condition your mind to kill, you have to see that person from that country or that society as a non-person in order to be able to kill them without a conscience. So how did you, with the spirit that you have of giving and love and service, how did you balance out that thought and that training to be ready to kill someone as part of the job?
So first of all, I just want to thank you for that question. I think it's a great question. I think it's a fair question. And I think you're absolutely right. There's no way to step into any military branch, and that's all four, Marine, Navy, Army, or Air Force, without having the training to be able to confront an enemy combatant. They teach you about that. And even in the early stages of basic training, you have to learn how to fire a weapon, whether it is a handgun or an assault rifle. And I had to learn how to do both. You have to learn how to navigate open terrain. So you live outside for 2 weeks. So it is very much a part of the military experience. And I would say to your question, for me personally, it was mainly me trusting in God. Again, it goes back to when I first gave the kind of like opening introduction, explaining who I am and where I'm from. I did feel called to be in the armed forces. And for certain people who, let's say maybe they didn't come about it that way, you know, maybe they just decided out of high school, they saw their buddies join and they're like, oh, I want to join too. You know, no, I'm not bashing on them at all, but it's just saying that being in the military is something that a person should be called or should feel called to do, because not everybody can do it. It's just the truth of the matter. And I've seen a lot of people come into the military, and this is all different branches, come into the military, and within a year, not even 2 years, they exit the military because they understand that it is an extremely sacrificial job, right? You're giving up everything to serve your country. You know, that's family time, that's personal time, that's your dreams, that's your hopes. You're giving up all of that to serve your country. And you're also having to face the reality that you do, and you may have to be placed in a situation where you have to face off with someone who wants to take your life, and you have to take their life before they can take yours in the defense of the country that we all know to be America. So for me personally, it was all about my trust in God. And it was a conversation I would have with God pretty often, actually. Now, my particular job in the Air Force was aircraft structural maintenance. So to put that in simple terms, I did what a body mechanic does to a car. So, you know, you get a fender bender on the road, you take the car in, they fix the car, they give you the car back, it's fixed. I did that with aircrafts. So my first real experience or real taste of any action of war was being overseas for the first time. I was in a Middle Eastern state known as Kuwait. And I had no idea that it was a combat zone when I was there because, again, they won't put you in that mind state. They need you to be focused on fixing the aircraft. So they only give you need-to-know information, which sounds a bit risky, right? But I appreciated the fact that they only told me what I needed to do. So an example would be, hey, if you're working on the aircraft and you hear this sound, here's what you need to do. If you hear this sound, then here's what you need to do. It was more like a know where you are and know what you need to do if you hear these different sounds. And to give you a little more context, okay, so mortar rounds are being fired near that base. Mortar rounds are like a handheld rocket being dropped into a tube and shot into the air. And they made me very familiar with what that sounds like. So I'm working on the aircraft, middle of the afternoon, and I hear the sound. And I'm not going to lie, my stomach drops into my lower abdomen. I mean, I didn't really know what to do. But I remember the training, and I remember what they told me. So I had to find the nearest bunker. And I'm telling you this all because it was really a matter of trusting in God for me. I understood that my job did not necessarily require me to have a weapon in hand. And I was happy about that. Even though I knew how to use the weapon, I was happy about the fact that, okay, Lord, my job is to just work on this aircraft. So maybe ignorance was a little bliss, I would say, in that regard. But I was truly trusting God for every moment of what I contributed to the Air Force, even whether that was overseas or whether that was stateside. My job was just to work on the aircraft. And in the case where I had to be given a weapon and given the helmet with the flak vest, and now I have to go out here and you know, really confront the enemy on the front lines, if that were the case, again, I would still just be trusting in God. It is not a pretty way to defend the country. There's no pretty way to do it because the enemy combatants that want to inspire terror in others, or really just take territory, they're not going to be kind or considerate or want to talk about it to negotiate. They want to come in with brute force and have their way. And so the only other way to combat that is with brute force. It's a sad thing to say that Americans or the armed forces will be placed in that situation. And I'm sure that no one likes that idea. No one likes the idea of being placed in that situation. Even when I was in Kuwait, I remember working on an aircraft, and I saw this huge bus pull up, looked more like a Greyhound bus. And as I'm working on the aircraft, I'm on my knees. I got tools on the ground. I'm under the aircraft, and I'm watching these guys get off. And, I mean, they got the Kevlar helmets on. They have the bulletproof vest. They have the sidearm. They have the assault rifle. And it's probably about 30 of them. None of them are talking. None of them are joking. Their faces are devoid of emotion, and everyone's quiet. And then I realized in that moment that these guys are getting ready to go neutralize the enemy. That's the reason why the demeanor is the way that it is, you know. Mm. And in that moment, I'm thankful because I'm like, okay, God, I'm thankful for this job that I just – all I got to do is work on the aircraft. I don't have to go do what they do, you know. Mm. But, again, that was a part of me deciding what my job was going to be. But I also knew coming into it that there is a chance that I would be in that position. And if so, again – I am simply trusting in God. I have to trust in God for every single second of having that weapon in my hand and having to confront a threat.
Wow. Well, I got a follow-up question, but I know we got a bunch of calls on the line that want to speak, so I'll hold my second question and go to the phone lines, if I may, and open the mic for 773-984. Please introduce yourself to our listening and viewing audience and give us your question or comment for our guest, DeJohn Green.
My name is Rashid Ali. I'm the founder of Grassroots Organization Incorporated, and I'm interested in knowing from the brother what type of collaborations does he do contractually. Also, I want to let him know that I did have one of the highest form of contracts with Department of Veterans Affairs, a letter contract to work with veterans in bill repair as helpers. So I'm also interested in collaboration. So 1991, it became a trade that I wrote under the Davis Beacon Act. It's called the Bill and Repair Helpers. So it was designed to assist the youth and learning the trade so that they could continuously repair the abandoned buildings in their community. So I'm in need of some assistance and collaboration, and he seems like he's very intelligent and he's a veteran. So I would like to talk to him further about this issue and see what he'd be interested in expanding the contract.
Like a great business collaboration there with your architectural work and her contract and vision for doing the rehab of buildings. So, well, go ahead. Dijon, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I certainly appreciate the question, and thank you so much. As it poses an opportunity for me. I would say at this point in time, I am still very much in an academic development. I take on my first internship. I think it's actually about 6 months from now. I'm not sure if that will be overseas or stateside, but that will be right when my academic will collide with my professional. It's only a matter of time before graduating and then officially getting a license. So I certainly appreciate the opportunity. There's not much I can navigate right now, not having the license. So I am a year out from graduation, and once I graduate, then getting an architectural license will definitely open up the door, be able to maybe look at maybe multiple contracts or look at new and budding projects. But as of right now, I am strictly in the capacity of the academic. But thank you so much for the opportunity. I certainly appreciate it.
Well, we have a project that's going, and we have a few licensed architects and engineers that's helping us to rebuild our community and rid the blight by repairing buildings. So we have one project that's in, Chatham? Yeah, in Chatham, and we're interested in having internships. So if your internship happens to be in the state, it would be a great opportunity for you to learn and earn, especially as an intern. So.
Yes. Well, Russ, I'll share your information with him so that you all can make that connection. And definitely that kind of gives some opportunities for future plans because he can start mapping out what he's going to do once he gets his degree and license and, you know, perhaps have projects already lined up. So that's great.
And I just want to ask a real quick question, if I may. Dijon, how old are you? If I could ask.
I am 35 years old.
Okay.
There we go.
Yeah. All right.
Nice professional. Just the right age. So thank you so much, Rashida, and I will forward his information with you, and perhaps you all can exchange information, and, you know, who knows, a year or two from now, you all be working on a building. All right, let me go to area code 312-366 Grand Rising. Introduce yourself to our listening and viewing audience and give us your question or comment for Dijon Green. Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you now. Yes. Loud and clear. Go
okay.
Right ahead with your question for Dijon.
Okay, thank you. How you doing? I am so glad to be on this call this morning. Give praises to our creator and everyone that's listening. And just we want some unity in our communities. I'm Sister Darva, our soul prophetess, whatever you want to call me. God bless you. Nice. I hear you guys, all of you guys. Thank you. And I just wanted to say I heard the brother talking about with the soul, where as far as the architect. I know back in the day, I met an architect about 30 years ago. He was the only first black architect. He was African American in the city of Chicago or the state of Illinois. But it's been some time. I wanted to say he mentioned something. If you have a solar commercial going on, I wanted to say that I've been approached by a solar company in Chicago, whether that's in Illinois, that would like for me to come in to work with them on different entities. So I think that's a good thing. I don't know a lot about solar. I read a lot about solar. I know about solar energy, and I don't know if your brother that's there, is he involved with anything with the solar energy or anything?
I am still learning about those technologies. I would say I'm not, like, involved at a professional level. No, I'm not. Maybe on when it comes to academic, as far as learning the capabilities of such technologies or how to implement it into commercial and residential, I'm learning about those things at this moment in time.
Oh, okay. I just
is that a like
yes,
a special
ma'am.
Course? Because
I'm sorry,
is
I, did,
kind of
I
like
didn't hear the
specialized. It's kind of a specialized field, but it's becoming a growing requirement in certain states that the new construction also include solar energy. So is that a special course that you would have to take as an architect to learn specifically about, you know, all of the technology surrounding solar energy?
No, I wouldn't say it's a specialized course. It's definitely a part of my degree plan. So within the 5-year degree plan I have, there are required courses, really just based on years and years of architectural experience amongst those who already practice architecture in the state of Texas. So it's a part of what they call MEP, which stands for Mechanical, Electrical, and Plumbing. So solar systems would really fall into mechanical systems. And they teach us how to use these systems, again, when you're referring to like a residential atmosphere, if you're talking about like everyday row houses or in neighborhoods, or if you're talking about commercial office buildings and high-rise buildings. So they teach us to implement that into our design. But I think what you're asking is, as far as like an architect being able to specialize in such, if that's the case, yes, I do think that further schooling would be needed if you're really trying to understand exactly how everything works as far as the ins and outs of, you know, assembly and transportation and the resources provided in order to be able to put it all together. But as far as just kind of understanding the basics of how solar systems work and how they're implemented, that's definitely a part of my degree plan.
Great. And Sister Darva, you had a follow-up question you were asking?
Oh, well, I just want to make an announcement about the what you're doing with the Justice 12, Inc. We are an entity of 12, we are a group of 12 entities that focus on bringing and bridging the gap back to our ponds, community, neighborhoods, and blocks. And so we meet at the Harold Washington Park after we pray at 12 noon every Saturday. And then we are meeting after that, we do the reparations meeting so that we can come together to go and confront our elected officials about the wealth of the wicked. And so transfer. And so that's what I want to let everybody know, that we're at the Hale Washington Park over there every Saturday with Minister Plump and the rest of our team. You guys have to forgive me. I've been so busy. You guys will have to pray because I'm working on some projects that God is bringing out. Oh, hallelujah, is bringing, and I'm really not trying to do it all by myself. I'm praying for unity in our own black communities, and so I want everybody to come together. I'm asking black, our people, the children, to come together to get our children on the right track. The word of God is telling me that the reason, oh, hallelujah, God, I keep waking up every morning being filled with the Holy Spirit to reach out. And so I need our men and women of the cloth. I need our fivefold ministry as well as our prophetic, our men and women, to come and do what needs to be done for our children. Because without that, we're going to continue to go through what our children are going through with all of the violence and things of that sort. The enemy is really raging very heavily, heavily, even in my life, even in, you know, all across every place, and people don't know what to do. And so I'm asking and I'm begging and calling out that the Holy Spirit would lead, God, and direct our men and women that are calling to the order of his order, so so that we can get in order of the order of the family, the men,
Darby,
the women, and the children.
We are focused on that imminent right thing. So please give me a call.
Yes.
I want you to get
my
whatever
opportunity. Okay, who is that, my girl? Oh, that's my sister. Okay.
Yeah,
you know, I've been trying to, I've been meaning to call you my sister. I didn't mean to take the conversation to another different arena. But my sister, I've been so busy, and I wanted you to reach out because I've been going through spiritual warfare. Every time I wake up, I'm fighting in the spirit. Yes. And
well,
so I need you. I want you.
So, Sister Darva, we're going to connect you with Dr. Debbie because she's got a powerful ministry.
I know Dr. Debbie. Yeah, you know I know Dr. Debbie.
Yes.
Dr. Debbie, I'm so sorry, but I've been so spiritually, I'm fighting a spiritual warfare.
We have
to
live our lives.
Like I'm
by
myself.
So much
but I'm going to definitely get back in touch with you because we're
I'll call you today. I'll call you today. I love you all. Thank you all. Thank you for letting me speak. I didn't want to take over the show. God bless you.
Keep on praying, sisters, because that is where the work is being done
in
the spirit.
I just want to, because I know our guest has to leave at 9:30. I want him to elaborate just a little bit about the book he's currently writing. And Dejan, if you could do that for us.
Certainly. it's something that the Spirit of God has put on my heart to do. He's been speaking with me about it for quite some time, and it's really developing my life and kind of like my outlook, not only as an individual, but just kind of learning what it means to be a man of God. But the book itself is just basically a series of short stories having to do with the power of redemption. And it's mainly the power of redemption from the aspect of when just one person believes in another. So maybe to give just a few examples, maybe when a grandmother believes in a granddaughter, and maybe that granddaughter, you know, made some really bad decisions early on in life, and maybe she's struggling to find her footing in life, but because of the belief of her grandmother, she can't help but see herself in a better life, in a better way. And because of that belief, it drives her to become someone or become the person, I'd say, that God created her to be. And so that is the main theme throughout all the stories. It's just the power of when one person decides to believe in another. I'd say that there's something special about when a group of people believe in one person, but there's definitely something uniquely special about when one person believes in another. It's almost like the person who's believing can see another version or another form of that person, regardless of what they may be showing at that point in time. And if I could just kind of give a little bit of like the, let's say like a little bit of the opening story. It's like a single mom. She has three jobs. She works a job in the morning at a cleaning service. She works a job in the afternoon. And that's like a food delivery service. And she works a third job on the weekend, at like a nearby local pub and bar. And she's trying to raise a 9-year-old son by herself. She's a single mother. And, as the story develops, you'll see her struggle. She's struggling to be on time. She's anywhere. She's struggling to pay bills on time. She's struggling to provide a healthy, environment for her 9-year-old son. She's trying to be both mom and dad, you know, and she can feel the weight of the world on her shoulders, and she's just barely keeping up, you know, and you see these other characters that want to plan ahead, and they ask her about her future, and she has nothing to say because she can't really see the future. She can't really see tomorrow. She's just trying to make it through the day. And so you see this develop, and you also see this kind of like character stepping in, who introduces himself and you don't really see exactly how he connects right away, but you begin to see his belief in her. And it's one of the people that she works with. And this character begins to kind of notice really great things about her personality and really, you know, kind of like these anointings on her life, just things that she's been gifted to do. And he's pointing these things out, and she's like, well, I never saw that. And how are you seeing these things? How do you understand these things about me? And before you know it, it drives this moment where now she's beginning to see that someone else believes in her abilities, even when she lacks the belief in her own abilities. And so because of that one person choosing to believe and choosing to show up, let's say maybe she had like a presentation of sorts in a public setting, that person who believes is sitting right in the crowd cheering her on. And so she's noticing that every time that she makes a move in the direction to become the person that God has created her to be, that this one person is still there and still believing. And toward the end of the story, you will see all of what was planned for her, you know, God's purposes for her. You'll see those things come into fruition. You'll see those things be manifested. But this key person choosing to believe in that, choosing to believe in her, played such a major role. And so that's really what the basis of these short stories is all about, is the power of when just one person decides to believe in another and all of the great things that can come out of that. Yeah.
Right. And what's the title of the book again?
So it's still in development, I don't quite want to nail down a title, but it would just be, if I could just give a main idea, it'd just be like redemption stories. The power of when just one person believes in another. So.
Yes. I'm looking forward to it.
That sounds wonderful.
Yes, yes. And so many people have given credit to that one person who stood by them no matter what, through all they've been through. So that's going to be a very powerful book. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, it is. And I know you have to go. So if you want to just leave us with, you know, a few words that you would just like someone your age or somebody that's inspiring to be something, you know, maybe going through a struggle right now, depending on, you know, what they're going through. What would you like them to know?
I would say I would like them to know that today's society that we live in really tries to send the message that it's all about the outer man, right? It's all about how I look on the outside. It's all about what I see when I look in the mirror. It's all about what's going on the outside of me, and that's a false message. It's completely false. The opposite is true. Life consists more of what is going on the inside of you. It consists more of how you see yourself, not what you see in the mirror, because that's different. Those are two different things. What I see in the mirror versus how I see myself is two different things. And I would say that it doesn't – having a life that is thriving, having a life where you are content, having a life where you wake up with joy in the mornings does not consist of what you have in your bank account. It does not consist of what kind of car you drive or the kind of house you live in. In fact, that has nothing to do with it. It has everything to do with what is going on the inside of you. Is there peace on the inside of you? Is there joy on the inside of you? And if so, where is the peace and joy coming from? Because the source of where the peace and joy is coming from is just as important as the peace and joy itself. And to that fact, it would be a matter of the creator, right? Because I am the created being a human being. I'm the created. I'm not the creator. So the fact that I can understand that there's a creator and I'm the created, that places me in alignment. That lets me know that, okay, there is a source. There is someone I can go to. It's not something, it's someone. And so he lives on the inside of me. And if that relationship is aligned and at peace, and if me and him are on the same page, me and the creator, and if that's the place where my peace and joy and love and patience is coming from, I am living my best life today. I'm living my best life today. So I think that it is the world that we live in, the world that has came to be of now, where it promotes this message that I have to look a certain way and I have to dress a certain way and I have to use this shampoo and I have to drive this type of car and I have to have this type of home. And I think all that does is just really just send a stream of falsehood. And if you're not careful, even we've all been guilty of being caught up in the falsehood of it all, that a person is really a matter of what is going on inside of the person, not what's going on outside. And to that fact, I would say one more thing. When it comes to worth and value, the only one that can decide what I'm worth or what my value is the person who created me. Nothing else can decide that, you know. My salary can't give me my worth. neither can my husband or my wife, right? I think that we make the mistake of looking to the wrong things. And it's because we're human and we live amongst humans. So we tend to sometimes make the mistake of thinking that God is like humans, and he is absolutely not. He doesn't operate on the same playing field, nor does he coordinate or speak to us or interact the same way. He really doesn't. If I could just narrow it down or kind of come to a conclusion, it would be understanding that true life and the true experience of what life is, in order for one to be grateful to life, it'd be a matter of understanding what's going on the inside of you and understanding that that is where life resides. It does not reside here on the outside, because here on the outside, everything that you see on the outside is going to perish. It has a shelf life to it. But what's going on the inside of you, oh, no, that will live on even after your time here comes to an end. And I think just understanding that and keeping that in mind sets the table for your best life today. Yeah.
Well, I got a comment for you, Dejan. One of our Facebook watchers, viewers, Deborah Smith says, "Wise thoughts and words bless you on your path." Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. I probably have about 6 to 7 more minutes to hang out with you guys if you guys had any other questions.
Well, we got to take a quick break, but then we come right back, and I know we got some calls on the line, so I'm going to see if we can give them an opportunity, and we will be right back after about a minute, so just hang with us, and we'll, and let's see, 773-960, I think, 779-801, I think you were next, and then 773-960, and then 111-111. Not sure how many we'll get through before our guest leaves, but we'll be right back. So stay with us.
Taxes are higher than ever. Every day, thousands of our residents leave Chicago to shop in Indiana. Jobs are being lost, and businesses are relocating. Let's find a way to lower our taxes to encourage residents to continue living and shopping in our city. Let's rebuild. Let's restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of the city of Chicago, and I will work hard to find solutions that matter. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for Mayor.
Do you worry about finances, family, health, job, relationships? Are you in pain? Do you feel stuck? If you answered yes to any of these questions, help is available. Don't worry, you're not alone. It's part of the human process. You only feel this way because you haven't mastered the voices in your head. No hype, just down-to-earth, solid, workable tools and techniques that you can practice daily. It's really food for the soul. Whether you want to learn how not to worry about anything, reverse type 2 diabetes, publish a book, promote your product or service, or just make extra money. To take advantage of the deal of the day, go to ZeldaSpeaks.com or call 312-409-6619. Mention promo code The Female Solution and get free shipping. That's ZeldaSpeaks.com
or 312-409-6619. Stop worrying today. Visit ZeldaSpeaks.com.
Okay, we are back.
All right.
And let me take a call, 779-801. And then after that, I'm going to go to 314-677. And then after that, 773-960. So just hold on, and then 111-111, and then 336-350. We got a whole bunch of callers going to talk to you. So that means, everybody, make sure you state your question or comment succinctly so we can see if we can see how many our guest can answer before he's got to go. Go right ahead.
Grand Rising, my name is Maika, and welcome to the show. Thank you for your words of wisdom and your commitment to letting your show. There's a statement that an architectural term, form determines function. Are you aware of that terminology?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So in the setting of America where we live in these structures that are basically squares and rectangles, I think that there's limitation that's put on us, whereas when you look at indigenous communities around the world, most of their structures are round or like Buckminster Fuller, he did the octagon. Do you see yourself incorporating more indigenous type structures as you move forward as an architecture?
That is a great question. The answer to the question is absolutely. I have studied Buckminster Fuller. I'm also like Frank Lloyd Wright, Le Corbusier. But to your point, both Frank Lloyd and Le Corbusier are all about mainly like modern rectangular box-like structures, I would say. And this goes back to your original statement of form and function. I think it is both are important, both form and function. If I had one to drive the other, I think it would be function over form. Not every architect would give you the same answer. But for me, it would be function over form, because you would first have to be able to use the space. The space itself needs to be useful before the appearance or the aesthetic is in place. You understand what I'm saying? But that's not to take away from the fact that maybe the form could follow the function in such a way where it creates these beautiful shapes, you know? Maybe there is a curvature introduced. Maybe there is slopes and angles introduced. So I think there is a way to be, there's a way to do it to be intentional and to be careful, but to also do it with the user in mind. Function for me is at the top of the list. And as I said, I would rather function dry form, but that's not to say that all of the form needs to be box-like and rectangular. I think no pun intended, but I think thinking outside of the box is something, is really the direction that architecture is going in right now. I can think of a lot of really large-scale structures, mainly like football stadiums or maybe stadiums where they hold the Olympics. And they were built really with an approach where it wasn't box-like at all. I can think of one that actually looks like a bird's nest. It's called a bird's nest. So to your point, I think that indigenous developments or let's say structures that resemble indigenous developments, I think that's definitely a part of architecture as a whole. I would be interested in going in any direction depending on what direction fulfills the main function of the building. So if it just so happens that it's box-like when it's done, I'm okay with that. Or if it just so happens that it's shaped like a snail when I'm done, I'm okay with that too, you see? So it's just a matter of, is it fulfilling its function? Because at the end of the day, it's the user that has to walk about these spaces and use it every day, and they will determine whether the architect did well or not. Does that answer your question?
However, when you did take into account the flow of energy within a structure, is there mm-hmm. not more flow in the curvature forms than the box-like forms?
Yes. I think that there's a much more dynamic energy in a curved structure. Here's the thing. It's really a matter of when it's introduced, you see. There are buildings that do both. There are buildings that make hard corners, but that same building also features soft corners, you know. So it's kind of, let's say, having a tool bag and knowing when to use the tool of introducing curves versus mm-hmm. hard angles and corners. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a great question. Thank you so much, Maika. Definitely. I think we all learned something right there. So let's see if I can squeeze another before you got to go. 314-677. Introduce yourself to our listening and viewing audience and give us your question or comment for our guest, DeJohn Green.
Well, I didn't really have a comment on your guest. I was going to comment on what was being said earlier. And Naomi, we've seen all these different get-togethers, you know, from 1964, the March on Washington, marches in the 70s, 1995, the Million Man March, the Million Woman March, the Million Man March sequel. So what is the outcome going to be? There's still these complaints about problems. If you had a million people standing together and they all looked at each other and hugged, and if they held hands and said that I love you, yeah, but what is the ultimate outcome? Because people are still complaining.
Well, you know what? That's point that we got all the optics of unity, but what does it really take? So, DeJohn, I'm going to ask you, what do you see? I mean, you have a practical skill, you know, rebuild the communities that are falling apart and change the energy of despair. So what do you see, DeJohn, as a way to take the symbolicness of what we've been doing and actually make it a practical reality where we truly create and build what we need? What do you see?
I really don't have an answer. Oh, if you was asking me that, I don't have an answer for that. I was listening to Willie Wilson. Willie Wilson said if you elect him mayor, he didn't say what he's going to do. He said what he's going to try to do. It seemed like everyone is trying to do
something. Let me let DeJohn give his perspective as a young man, up-and-coming architect, builder, somebody who has practical skills, and you can appreciate that, I know, because you've been in the business. So, DeJohn, what do you see as a practical way to turn the desire for change into real substance?
I'd say, one, coming just from a general aspect to this guest's comments, I know that in the time that we live in right now, hope seems scarce. It seems very difficult to find hope. You can look in any direction, and most of them look hopeless, right? But I myself think it's a matter of what you place your hope in. I think that you made some very good points, sir, as far as the large gatherings. I learned about those. I can't say that I was there for any of them. I'm just an 86 born. I'd say the ultimate reality is humans all together. I think humanity is a beautiful, wonderful, vibrant, colorful, I think it's a colorful existence, right? But I think also that there is a lot of hate, right? There's a lot of tension, right? There is a lot of oppression. I mean, I think that there's two sides to humanity. And I think that
the world that we live in today, it's really just the objective of who we have became and what we've allowed to happen, and in the sense that sin has its own space, evil has its own space, and evil can shapeshift and change form and move and downgrade and upgrade and graduate. I mean, evil can take place. Evil is so elusive. There is really no real solution to be found other than that which is in God. And I think that as the world turns and as we continue to move toward the 2023s and 24s and 25s, I think some things will get better. But I think other things will remain the same or become more worse. And again, I think that that is the space of sin and evil. Martin Luther King had a terrific speech on this, and I'm not referring to the I Have a Dream speech. I'm referring to the letters he wrote from Birmingham jail. And he specifically was talking about how he was wrestling. He was trying his best to understand as a human the source and the reason of why sin and evil have to exist. And he said he couldn't figure out the answer to it. And neither can we. Neither can we. The only thing that we can do is start from an individualistic standpoint as saying, let me be the change that I want to see. If there's going to be any difference, it starts with me. It starts with how I treat people. So I think that that's probably the best approach that we can take until the Creator decides that this episode that we call life has come to an end. Now, as far as from an architectural standpoint, I think it goes back to the example I gave earlier. If a child or an adolescent grows up in a neighborhood where it is dejected and defamed and abandoned, that leaves a particular impression on that child. I'm not saying that, you know, I should go into every single neighborhood in America and change the face of it, but I'm saying I'm willing to try it. I mean, well, what do I have to lose? You know, I'm willing to try it, right? That's a cause and a task worth taking up, you know. But I think the idea for sure is to find out, and this would be my approach. I would want to go into the toughest neighborhoods in America. I want to go into the neighborhoods that nobody wants to drive through. I want to go into the neighborhoods where nobody wants to park their car, right? And I want to not go there and erect something, but I want to find out where's the heart of this neighborhood. Can I talk to the elders who've seen this neighborhood develop? Can I talk to the people? Can I talk to the heartbeat of this neighborhood, right? And I want to find out what they think. I want to find out their living experience, right? And find out the culture and the background and how that neighborhood came to be. And then I will emerge with the information to erect something that is meaningful, you know. And from that point, they can use that built, you know, use the building or use the sports complex or recreation, however they want to. But I only want to help them along the way of creating a neighborhood that is livable, that is healthy, and that gives them the impression that they are worth it and that they have value. So that would be the approach I would take as it pertains to architecture.
Wow, that is powerful. Well, I know we've kept you far beyond when you said you had to go. But we can squeeze in one more caller. Area code 336-350, make it quick. Our guest got to go. We're about to wrap.
No, we can do one more. I do one more with you guys.
Dr. Lateef.
Yes, ma'am. Your mic is open.
Bless your heart. Thank you so much, young man. You're going to make me cry. How old are you, sir?
I'm just 35 years old.
That's an 8. And today, if you add the digits up, that's a 9. 8 represents you can build or destroy. And young brother, you are definitely, definitely not from this planet. I would love to adopt you. At my year of 70, I've been through so much. And you know what? You've inspired me, baby, to get up and move forward with this project, with this mission. Thank you. Thank you, baby. Thank you so much for inspiring me to move forward no matter what. You are definitely, definitely not from this planet, and this is Mama AZ. You take my number, get it from Dr. Lateef, and you can come over here to Arizona anytime, because I got something for you to do. I have young youth to inspire them, and I will help you until I can't move anymore. I mean that. I mean that. I mean that. I love you, and I give thanks to the Most High that your mother allowed you to come through her gate. Thank you, Dr. Lateef. Thank us. Thank you.
All right.
Thank us.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much. Yes. Love you, too.
All right. With Dr. Debbie, your son has been quite a hit. DeJohn Green, thank you so very much. If you didn't get a chance to talk to him, we'll have to invite him back, because you had a bunch of folks that still wanted to have something to say to you today. But we know you've got to go. And Dr. Debbie,
yes,
take
ma'am.
Away.
Thank you so much, DeJohn, for being on with us. And we hope that you will definitely, meet with us again, because, again, as I told you when I spoke to you prior, that you inspire someone. And that's a beautiful thing. You inspire somebody. You never know who's listening. You never know who needs a word of inspiration or just something that, I can keep going on. So, again, bless you in your endeavors. I know you're going to continue to do well. And no matter what happens, you just keep going forward, because you got a great career ahead, but most of all, a great life, that, most people, again, sometimes they get in that rut. And I know you probably say, I'm still a work in progress, because sometimes we don't see our greatest victories. We don't see them. We don't see them until we actually lived them already. And then we can look back and like, wow, yes, the Creator was with me all the time, but he gave me what I needed so that I can continue this journey. So, again, hats off to you, and thank you for allowing us to be a part of your life for this moment in time.
Yes, ma'am. Thank the both of you so much for having me. It really has been a joy to be a part of something like this.
People want to hear what you have to say. You're popular.
Right.
You're natural at it.
That's right. Come on back now.
Thank you.
It's been such a joy. I this is my first time ever doing anything like this. I was telling my mother that just a few days ago. It was my first time ever doing anything like this. So I certainly appreciate the opportunity. And I think it's a wonderful platform that you all are creating and providing for others in a time where it's really needed most. I mean, this is such an unprecedented time that we live in. So it's definitely needed. So, again, thank you for allowing me to be a part of it. And I'll definitely get with my mom about the possibility of coming back to hang out with you guys. But be blessed. In the meantime, be blessed and continue to move forward and propel and walk forward into the destiny that God has called the both of you. You know, he has a plan for both of your lives. And he don't make no mistakes. He knows exactly what he's doing. He's a tactician and a strategist all at once. He's great at what he does. So it's been a pleasure. And you all enjoy your afternoon, or enjoy your morning. I guess it's still morning where you guys are.
Likewise.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you so very much.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. And we are fantastic.
Yes.
We are so pleased.
Yes, it was. To invite him back, and I'm sorry that we didn't get to all the callers, but hey, look at it this way. Just give me about another week or so, I'll bring him back.
That's right.
I'll bring him back on as soon as I can, because one thing about it is people are inspired by people who are doing great things.
Yes, they
are.
Yes,
especially when they're younger, and doing great things. That makes it all worth the while. Yes, yes. Especially Mama D. Mama D. That's right, earth.
Yeah. We had it 7.
I know.
We've come to the end of our show but you can hear every show in the archive at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/the-female-solution. Leave your comments about today's show. You can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. HLATIF.com. Watch our TV show.
Morning.
Listen
morning.
To our radio shows. Order our book.
Yes.
And be sure to
Deborah,
get a copy of the book.
For joining us.
Solution. On behalf of our
Dorothy
team,
for joining us.
I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today.
She was here.
And to
yeah.
our global family listening from all around the world, we say. Thank you. To our family in China, Cheche, India, Zanyaba, Japan, Arigato, Korea, Kamsahamnida, Russia, Spasiba, Germany, Danke, Poland, Jeonkunyo, France, Merci, Spain, Gracias, Italy, Grazie, Egypt, Shukran, Ghana, Madasi, Nigeria, Eshe, South Africa, Ngiyabonga, Senegal, Geret, Kenya, Asante, Israel, Toda, Pakistan, Shukriya, Afghanistan, Tashakor, Saudi Arabia, Shukran. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you. And may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessings.